For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. That's right. For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you. For the record, lab on me going all the way. For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste. Stop calling. For the record, 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 I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
Here we are back at the Clink Stories of Redemption Season 4. What a season it has been. Inspiring, powerful women with amazing stories of redemption. Today is no different. Today, we're going to end the season on a very powerful story. One that needs to be told. Diane Ball, Zona Kelly, welcome to the Clink. How are yous?
Good, good.
You ladies have a story that needs to be heard. One that I don't think many people out there will really know any truth about, and it dates back to a young boy born Michael James Nichols in 1971 who passed in 1972, who was your brother, correct?
Yes. Mum had four girls and four boys. Di was raised, like me and Di were raised by our great-grandmother and grandmother. And then she had Michael in 1971 in November the 23rd. He was a healthy baby. He was an 8-pounder. And he got sick and turned around when he stopped drinking. Mum had to take him to the doctors in January 1972.
Just for the listeners too, if I can just ask you, Zona and Di, where's your mob from? What country?
Armidale. New South Wales.
Yep. Okay. So this all took place in Armidale?
No, in Kempsey, up in Dungaddy area.
Country, I know it, yes.
And what happened was Mum took him to the doctors. They put him into Kempsey Public Hospital. And this is where the trauma started, that they transferred him down to Camperdown's Children's Hospital, Children's Hospital,
yes,
in Camperdown, on the 15th of January 1972. So he wasn't drinking and he was losing weight. He was transferred to Camperdown on the 15th of January in 1972 from Kempsey Hospital. They concluded that he had a rare blood disorder, because he was losing weight and wasn't drinking his bottles. So once he went down there, they put him in a ward where segregated Aboriginal children were placed, and they classed him on his medical records as a half-caste Aborigine in those days. And Michael got really sick. They were giving him blood transfusions, and he ended up getting gastro in the hospital for 7 days, and he died on the 24th of January 1972. And Mum got her, when she went back to see him, they wouldn't let her view his body, and they took her into a room and got her to a forcedness of signing an autopsy. And then because we had Mum and them had no money to bury Michael, they went to the Charlie Perkins organisation, the Aboriginal Fairs, at Surry Hills, to ask could they assist with the funeral, and they assisted with the funeral, but they buried him in a Catholic section, not the 7A Ventus, and we thought he was quite safe there, that he was in a single grave. And then what happened, this is where our journey started in 2015, that we found out that where Michael was after the death of another brother who died of a heart attack.
Another brother of yourself and dies?
Yeah. Yep. And, of course, through all the grief, I decided to find Michael, because Mum talked about Michael, but she had no photos of Michael. She'd just describe him and said that we had a brother between Dawson and Annette, our younger sister,
yeah,
and his name was Michael. So Michael kind of like grew up with us, even though we never saw a photo of him or never knew him.
He was spoken of.
Yes, he was spoken of. And many, many mothers, when they lost a child, in Aboriginal women, they don't talk about their babies that they've lost.
I understand that, yep.
But with mum, it was part of her grieving that she made sure that the other seven siblings were well aware of Michael. After Dawson died in 2014, I started looking for Michael in early June in 2015, and I found him at the biggest cemetery at Rookwood in Sydney.
Yep. Let's just take a step back for those that are listening at the moment. Zona, you must have really had to do a lot of work to find out where Michael was. It wasn't just a plain and simple burial of where he was it?
No. Well, Mum used to call it Rockwood.
Yep.
And I actually rang Rookwood and asked, did they have a Michael Kelly? Because Mum always said that he was in Kelly. And turned around, they said, yeah, we got an adult Michael Kelly, but no child. So it just dawned on me one day that he could be in her maiden name of Nichols.
Yes.
And there it came up. And I was, that day, I rang my mother to give her the first message that I found Michael. And that was a very day that we celebrated. So we knew where he was. So then what happened in 2016, my brother Stephen, who's in between me and I, he went down and they took him to there was a multiple grave of children with no headstones.
A multiple grave of children. So
yes,
young babies that basically had just been stacked on top of each other.
Graves.
That's disgusting.
So it was just like a normal, like, park area, no headstones, nothing. And Stephen took a bunch of flowers and asked where Michael was, and they said baby Nichols is here, but you can't put the flowers on the grave. You have to put the flowers in the tree because there's another baby buried on top.
And now let's just put this in perspective. This is no relation either.
No.
Fair enough, you see family vaults where, you know, families are buried on top of each other or what have you. But this is a young Indigenous man that was taken from his country, Kempsey, Dungutty country, in a time where, if I can be very honest, and, you know, we've just had an amazing First Nations woman on with a powerful story, Marie Barbrick, and she was from exactly Kempsey, and she was, you know, the last of the stolen generation. That being said, there was a lot of politics around Indigenous children, wasn't there, at this period of the 70s that was very controversial, that the government today still have a lot to answer for as far as I'm concerned, and UMOB must be, you know, seeking answers as well.
Yes.
How was that?
Well, as the journey went through, after Stephen found out there was a multiple grave, he rang my mother, who rang me, and I said, no, Mum, Michael's in a single grave, but he's in the Catholic side. So I rang up Rookwood, and Rookwood, I said, can there be a plaque or anything put there until we can get the money to exhume Michael and take him home to Armidale?
Yeah.
But they turned around and said, I'm sorry, but there's a 70-year-old man buried on top of your brother in 1986.
What the fuck?
Yes.
A 70-year-old man
buried on top of Michael in a pauper's grave, a row of pauper's
graves. So is there identification of this 70-year-old man being buried there? Is there a plaque or something to commemorate the passing of him?
Yes.
Yep.
And here's your young brother underneath this...
Underneath the 70-year-old homeless man.
Well, I get that. 70-year-old homeless man, that happens. But I don't understand how they have the hide to sit there and put anybody on top of...
It gets better.
Oh, please go for it, because this is something that needs to be heard. And
When Diane, I'll let Diane talk because she was the one that got the burial deed.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a mission. Like everything to...
Was when you say it was research. A mission, Di, was it mainly because everything had been covered up? Like, you know, from the government's point of view of being able to get any information?
It was more like red tape,
yep.
Bro. Like
yep.
Every door that we tried to get through, it was like slammed.
Yeah.
We didn't have no support. And when we had to get permission off, you know, Rockwood to go to another agency to access, you know, like information about our brother, was just unbelievable, just to access what information that we needed to get. Me and Zona, we bounce off each other.
Oh, I can see that.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
I was just about, for those that are listening at the moment, I'm looking at two wonderful sisters here, and just the energy from them both is very powerful. And I've got to say, you know, like just in the short moment that we've had this chat, and then we've got a lot more to get through yet, but I can see that there's a very strong connection between the both of you. And I think that is starting to give me a bit of a picture of what your mob's all about and, you know, the fight in you. And your family, I can see that already. So
it was a long, hard journey. Took a lot of our energy.
Yeah.
I wouldn't wish it on anyone for all the red tape that we went through. I have the belief that there's more to the story.
Yeah.
So basically that didn't define us. So we kept going and going until we found what we needed. And then going back to the actual, you know, records of a cemetery, they had no records. It was just only Michael's name, father unknown, funeral director unknown. It really crucified us.
How was your mum feeling, at, you know, through this stage? Mum's still alive today, is she?
Yes, she is.
Oh,
so
bless
pretty
her.
Much on our yeah. journey through this, we had to... hold certain things back.
Yeah.
Because yeah. of her health.
Be traumatic for her to relive, true, yes. wouldn't it? Yeah.
Me and Zona, we were exposed to the full force of it.
Yeah.
Emotionally, you know, mentally, being told, you know, and seeing information that you wouldn't wish, you know, how could they get it wrong? You know, you got 101 questions of how could they get it wrong? It was a new single grave. But they were saying that it was a multiple grave. Then you get the records to clarify that it was a, you know, a new single grave, that to us, he wasn't a pauper, you know, and you think as a mother today, to think of my mum, of everything that she went through, of, yeah. you know, not saying her last goodbyes to our baby brother,
yeah.
not holding him. You know, seeing him, it crucifies a mother.
Yeah.
And to go through that, to relive that journey, it was very emotional and very hard.
Yeah, and see, on his burial deed, Di went and rang up the... Because on it, we went and got his death certificate.
Zona, can I just I'm just curious about this, and please don't think I'm being rude by interrupting, but I'd like to just trigger on points when you speak because it's important. You mentioned that there was a foundation that assisted...
Yeah, Aboriginal Affairs.
Aboriginal Affairs, okay.
Yeah, the Foundation of Aboriginal
Department
Affairs.
Department of Aboriginal Affairs, which wasn't a government-run organisation.
So tell me, if they assisted, why was your brother buried in a pauper's grave with no plaque and no identification for years, but yet it was assisted by an organisation to help make sure that he did have...
Well, that was our argument.
Because
what happened, see, what happened was on his burial deed from where the funeral home that buried him, the guarantee, it was called a guarantee, which is the owner of the lease, was a not-for-profit organisation. That's why our mother had no rights.
Yes, he had no rights when we got that. So we're not for profit, because under the destitute grave policy, not-for-profit
organisation. This is something that a lot of people wouldn't know, because it's obviously doesn't happen a common thing to happen. And secondly, why would people know anything about this until it happens to you? You know what I mean?
Yeah, but can I say it is happening today?
It's still happening.
Because
true.
If you are buried by the Department of Health, if your loved ones, your Indigenous loved ones, die in a hospital.
Yep.
And they get a graveside service through the hospital that pays for the coffin and the priest.
Yep.
They are buried in a destitute grave, which is a pauper's grave, and they can put up to 4 or 6 people on top of there, and your loved ones, the lease is owned by the not-for-profit organisation.
Currently today, this is how this is what our country is all about today. And this is only for First Nations people?
No, for everybody who is buried in a destitute grave.
Okay, so it goes across the board.
Most of our mob,
yep.
Most of it, a high amount of our mob haven't got funeral funds. So when they die in the hospital system, and a lot of the mob that are listening will agree with us that they bury them through the hospital to just make sure they have a funeral. But the not-for-profit organisation that has got that lease of that grave, they don't own the land. The council owns the land because it's Crown land, but they own the lease of that grave that they can open it and put another person on top.
So does that tell me that it's all about fucking money?
Yes.
Because I can't see any other way. All right, okay, I get that they're leasing Crown land, but it's Crown land for starters too.
Yeah.
What are you going to gain by, you know, putting a body into a ground, and let alone stacking bodies of past loved ones on top of each other? Help me understand
because
that. And please,
running out of
room. I don't give a fuck about their room. I give a fuck about the humanity.
That's
of,
what they tell us.
You know, like, this is bullshit. This is terrible.
Well, see, it's happening today, because what's happening is, you know, the Land Rights Act.
Yes.
The actual funeral fund in that constitution hasn't changed since 1983, and we only get $1,000, and we even got $1,000 to reintern Michael, and that won't even bury a toe.
No.
We are being buried under taxpayers' money under a destitute grave policy.
I can't believe this. So, Di, tell us more about your research journey, because I did cut in just briefly there, but I like to sort of strike a point when you're making it, because I think it's important to talk about it there and then. You know, the difficulties and the red tape to be able to find Michael's burial, you know, your brother's place of burial, which is not home, obviously, especially being put in Rookwood. It's not his country. It's not, you know. Not with his mob at all.
Zona and I didn't give up. Like, we kept going. When we contacted Rookwood again, they said that they found him. They said that that they found where his resting place was.
And this was in 2016.
So what we did was we jumped in the car and went down. So when we got to the office, they had a map pinpointing where Michael supposedly resting place.
Yeah.
So basically we followed the map, went down, and the horrifying, you know, I said, look, can you at least put like a tag, you know? You think, oh yeah, they'll put a like a little red tag or something there.
Yeah.
And the most horrifying thing was when we got there and we found it was a tomato stick with a laminated stating this is Michael's resting place. Like I said, father unknown, funeral director unknown.
Oh my God. What, just printed off a computer and just stuck on there and
it was an unmarked grave.
It was unmarked. But that was the second grave we went to. So basically,
there's a third grave we went to.
So basically, we cried, we celebrated, put flowers,
put a little angel on there, you know, and went, you know, oh my God, you know, we found him at last, you know.
Yeah.
We went back and home below, we had a round table because they kept saying, oh, that there was a plaque there. So I said to my brother, Stephen, I said, look, go and check, go and check.
So who said they put a plaque there, Di, now? Who was?
Yeah, they said Rookwood. That there was
so
a plaque
Rookwood
on the
said,
second grade.
So they've honoured Michael now by...
they didn't put a plaque there.
There was no plaque there.
They took us to three graves. So basically I said to my brother, okay, bro, you know, go and check because they reckon that he's got a plaque. And he went and checked. There was no plaque. So then they called us for a big round meeting. We got there and... before we started the meeting, they had everybody there, you know, people that we didn't know. And they said, oh, what do you want to do, you know, about, you know, first, like, what's first do you want us, you know, to discuss? I said, well, the first thing I want to know, and I said, before this meeting begins, show me where Michael's plaque is. Because you can only imagine, you know, everything that me and Zona went through.
Absolutely.
But because I was getting what you call pissed off.
Yep.
Okay, show me this plaque. And it was two rows down from the other grave.
From the unmarked grave with the tomato steak.
So, and what? Oh, fuck.
And I was just like, we went, they actually drove us down there.
What was their reasoning for, like, what was their reasoning for sitting there? Did they hope that you didn't recognise that that was the grave and it was just a couple short and they thought, oh, well, they won't know?
They didn't have any, they didn't have the records properly.
So how do they then know that Michael was buried in this third one?
Well, his name was on the plaque.
Oh, that's fucking convenient.
That was the worry of our mother because we actually took some dirt from the unmarked grave home to her saying it was Michael. And then when she found out there's a third grave, we had to take the dirt back because it's culture.
Yeah, yep.
And she wanted DNA when he was exhumed, but there was no skeletal remains when he got exhumed.
Oh, that's sad.
So the only way we identified him was the fella that is on top of him, which was the 71-year-old. That was in the records and online. So that's how we knew it
that's
was Michael.
And it wasn't...
I'm a bit speechless, you know, on this one because, you know, like, it still doesn't... This is your brother. This is your mother's son. You know what I mean? This is your blood. You're seeking, I guess, peace and just want closure to know where your brother is for you all to move forward and to, you know, forever.
The third grave. I couldn't show emotion.
How would you? You've constantly been ripped and torn from one side to the other. Like, well, you'd be absolutely numb.
I was.
So, we fought through. See, I did all the legislations. I did submissions. Went through, you know, how the tent embassy had a, like, a little hole to go through to put the tent on the Canberra.
The old Parliament House.
Yeah, well, I used the same tactics, and because they were saying to us that we needed a submission of over 100 people's signature just to get to Parliament, and I said, no, Di, we're not doing that.
Over 100 people, but hang on a sec. This is not about anybody else but you and your mob. This is about your family. Like, what are you going to do? Ask a stranger in the street to sign a petition that has no understanding of what the cultural meaning of this is? One, two, the fact that it's your blood, it's your family, it's your brother, it's your mother's son, Michael. How the fuck do they expect you to go and get 100 petitions signed? Like,
we even went to the Koori knockout, but, you know, people don't want to talk about death.
Yeah, and no, but like,
I think Stan Grant signed it. And the thing was, I think we only got about 20.
Stan Grant signed it. Well, why didn't Stan Grant take it and do a story on it?
Well, we did. We did it through NITV.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah. His ex-missus to watch
it. That was that good-looking dub that he was with, eh?
I would say something, but I can't.
No, you're right. You're right.
She's listening.
And you know what, bud? This is the clink. You can say whatever the fuck you want.
So what we did, we looked at their reusable tenure, which is 25 years in the grave, that the federal government, I mean, was pushing. No, it was state government, state actually. Government. New South Wales was pushing to bring into as the first, us as the first guinea pigs, all us New South Wales people, to only lease your grave for 25 years, your next of kin. And then they just dig you up, put you in a bone room. This is for everybody in New South Wales, not only the Indigenous people, and they throw your headstone away and resell the grave.
I'm fucking speechless. I really am. I, you know what? And I mean this sincerely. I just hope that, you know, like I'm going to get burnt. That's all I can say.
Well, what
put my ashes out in the sea because, you know what, I don't want no one digging me back up and you know what I mean? Like, what family needs to go through that? 25 years? I mean, siblings, for example, you know, you sister girls have had a brother that's passed and, you know, you're not that old. So it is a very, very, very fresh thing. So I was born in 76 myself, you know what I mean? So we're in that era where it's not that long ago.
No.
You know, so in 25 years, if you were to be up and moved, you still got a lifetime ahead of you to mourn and go and visit the grave and, you know, be like, that's disgusting.
They were saying that they were running out of land, you know, to bury people. So they brought in this 25-year tenure. And what happened was I started attacking it through legislation like submissions. And I said, well, us Indigenous people don't fit under that 25-year tenure because we are, you know, one of the land.
We're custodians of the land. It's as simple as that.
Yes. And what happened was they ended up getting the State Land Council to go in there and they brought up our brother, which we were pretty insulted about because they didn't support us. In the beginning, the government, state government, was having chats with the Land Council, State Land Council, to see how they can exempt Indigenous people from this 25-year tenure. But what the Land Council wanted was more land to put Aboriginal people in Aboriginal cemeteries to segregate us. And how can you do that when we got multiple marriages now? No. It's not just about...
It's not just...
And multiple religions, you know. Yeah. That's what my argument was.
Yeah, fair call. Land Council is there as cultural support for First Nations people in reference to land, country.
Well, they got a funeral fund.
And that's exactly right. So,
for graves, people are struggling.
But so are those running it. Indigenous. They should know.
Yes, they are.
They should know culture better than anybody else. They should know what it's like for mob to have their loved ones that have passed as close to them as they possibly can.
It was on deaf ears. They didn't want to hear us. They didn't want to see that policy under the funeral fund that assists us when a loved one dies, where they give us $1,000. That's been going since 1983. See, it has not changed. Why can't it change now?
But that'd be $1,000 in tax these days to go to the funeral. They wouldn't even it wouldn't even cover the
castle. $10,000 to bury a loved one.
That's what I mean, and that's without GST.
And you know what they asked us when we asked for that $1,000 for Michael to go on the payment of reinterning him on country? They said we needed an Aboriginal confirmation of Michael, and I said he's been dead since 1972.
Hang on. When he went into hospital, you said that they identified him as an Indigenous baby and put him...
half-caste Aborigines, they call them.
So, okay, they identified him as an half-caste, as you've said, Aborigine, which then would tell you he's Aboriginal.
Yes, but you needed a certificate.
Well, on his death certificate, why wouldn't it have said a half-caste Aboriginal baby has passed if he was identified within the hospital and put into a segregated area with other Indigenous children?
No, we had to have a... And what happened was one of the senators, is it, from Dungari on the council, you know, on the State Land Council, one of the councillors, he had to write a letter to so that, because it was just a joke that we needed a confirmation of Aboriginality of Michael.
So both your mum and dad are both Aboriginal?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. Your poor mum. That's...
And see, and what hurt
that's,
my father...
That's an insult. That's an insult to your family, straight up, for them to even seek that information, knowing damn well.
See, they didn't even have Dorsey's name down as the father. They had a complete stranger on Michael's death certificate.
Just so it could be signed off.
Yeah, they had a William Nichols. And we don't even know who that was.
So this person wasn't obviously a legit Nichols.
No, they it's might just have pulled it out of fresh air.
That's what I'm saying. It's just a bodgy that they've put there to just get it be done.
Because it's Cedric Kelly is his father. So full mother, full father.
No half caste at all?
No.
Unbelievable.
Well, we got his medical records from the hospital to read that, you know, in the language that they used back then. It's pretty full on.
Yeah.
You know, a half caste black Aborigine wasted baby.
Is that where it was? Is that how Michael was identified?
Yeah, in the 14-hour report for the autopsy.
That's in writing.
That's in writing.
That's disgusting.
When you read those medical records, you know, straight out, I said to Zona, he was what you call a guinea pig. For my baby brother, who was 2.5 months old, for everything that he went through in those short time, he went to hell. And then when he passed away, and what they did in the autopsy, you know, like it just cripples me, you know, they dissected him like a lab rat.
That's unbelievable. Your poor mum at that stage.
We had to... Keep her strong.
So traumatic.
We kept a lot from her in regards to how hard we were getting through, like the red tape. She wouldn't have been able to do it on her own.
No.
As though I told you, the next part of Michael, what we
let's go. Okay. Oh, this is good. I want to know
the
more.
Listeners are bracing because what happened was in March.
March 2021.
Yes.
Yep.
It was only this year, early March, my brother went down and laid a plaque at a memorial, Aboriginal Memorial Garden at Westmead's Children's Hospital for Michael. He's the only baby because apparently they did an apology in 2006 for all the babies that died at Camperdown Children's Hospital and also the ones that were never returned home. So they got this memorial garden there.
And you didn't know about it?
Oh, we did because they told us that there was a memorial garden there.
So does that tell us that they've taken responsibility of these young babies, you know, passing for whatever reasons that they did in that time?
Well, see, when you look at Michael's era, all the regional babies and a lot of them who are listening on now from the regional would remember this, that when they were children, we were always sent to Sydney, like the Royal Far West Hospital, and I was down there for 6 years just for an ear infection, which I could have been fixed in a local hospital, but apparently they used to pick us up with a welfare woman and be taken down into this institution and segregated, like all the girls up top, the boys in the middle, and the babies at the bottom, and they actually had like little areas where you had baths, like little cubicles, and you had to have a bath, and you couldn't even wear your own clothes. So my grandparents couldn't send me clothes; I had to wear their clothes.
So was this only children that they took off a mish?
No, they were taking them. We were living at the halfway shop at Kempsey.
Mm.
Just because I got an ear infection, they wouldn't allow my grandmother to get help for an ear infection at the hospital. I had to go to Sydney, and this was in the 1970.
That's a long 76. Way from your mob when you back in there those days. That's a massive hike.
So you got to look at the whole picture. So when Michael got sick, all the Aboriginal babies. if they were malnutrition, which he was losing weight because he wasn't drinking.
So was it a gastro infection? Do we know specifically what it was or what he was diagnosed with?
They reckon he had a blood. It was like they told my mother leukemia. Yeah. And then we found out just recently when we got his medical records that they didn't know what it was. It was some kind of blood disorder.
Like a virus.
But they were treating him for it. But yet when they tested him in Camperdown Children's Hospital, he didn't have the cell of that virus.
No.
And on the 20th of January, he caught the gastro. Because what was happening in there, it was a training hospital and the professor who was in charge of all the children of care, which you call ward of the state.
State wards, yep.
Yeah. Yep. Well, that professor was allowing trainee doctors to go in and take biopsies of children that are alive and also in their autopsies take tissue samples.
Mm.
And put it in their PhDs from Sydney University. So basically all our little babies, the mothers that lost their babies down there, the biggest majority of them were lab rats.
How long was this going on for? Were you able to find out the period of time this took place?
Was in the early 60s up to 1980. See, they were... All our babies were, or children, because it was not only babies, it was children, 7, 6, you know, 5. They were injecting them because they made them water the state.
Well, these are all children, though, that were taken away from all their mob, that were taken as a stolen generation because that was the period. Marie Barbrick came on and she like I said, her mum was one of 13. She was taken.
Yes.
You know, she was one of 9. And her nan was raising her, and the black car used to come up, and she was taken. And what she went through was absolutely just sickening. You know, that generation, that 70s, early 70s, which is when she, at 6 years of age, was taken from her country and mob, there was so much.
See, what was happening is they called them what's called the Forgotten Australians.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, I know the babies.
Yeah.
See, it wasn't only just happening to the Aboriginal babies and children. It was happening to the European babies who were ward of the state. They were allowing them to do these experiments. See, what happened with us in March, that's why I had to tell you the story. We just recently found out from Westmead Children's Hospital that they've still got tissue samples. 3 vials, they reckon, in a biobank of Michael.
Labelled with his name and date.
Yes, yes. And they wanted to do more testing after 49 years, wanted to do more testing on his tissue samples to see what he really died of. And my mother nearly dropped to the floor because she was on the telephone call.
That we had.
Because we normally cushion her, but we had no idea what was coming out of this round table.
So you felt that it could have been positive for mum and not so heavily sort of, you know, taken.
No, it wasn't positive.
No, that's what I mean. It's
no, it crippled her inside because, see, when we did the return to country, repatriation means whole.
Whole.
Means body whole.
Complete, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
He wasn't.
Now we found out 2 years after we reburied him that they got body parts of him.
So his spirit within culture is just not free.
No. And that's they're handing that back over.
On Thursday
to our brother, which the Koori Mail is covering that story. So the vials are going to be handed to him. And
so you have to relive this again and rebury your brother.
We're going to go up next week and
they're going to open his grave for the third time
and put the, because we don't believe in cremation. My mother doesn't believe in that because we are, you know, they're Christian, like Seventh-day Adventists.
Yeah.
And so they're going to dig him open again for the third time to put this box at the foot of him.
Each family would have exactly the same, you know, culture around the burial and the spirit, release of the spirit, and bringing the body in Wahol home to country.
Yes.
To be free.
That's like in Northern Territory, they had blood samples for 50 years and they just got handed back from the university.
But there's a catch. They kept a percentage of it
For DNA research.
And I hope they don't keep a percentage of Michael's because I'll be checking for that.
Okay, and that's a fair call. How will you be able to determine if they have or they haven't?
We said we want everything, even if there's photos, even if there's records, even there's more than one vial or three vials, we want everything of Michael's to be handed over.
And then when he died, they tried to revive him. They gave him a blood transfusion. He was what you call, and then when he died, dissected him, pulled him completely apart like a lab rat. And then when they rang in March and to hear that.
So whose permission did they have to even do that?
I was disgusted in their behaviour.
It's under the Autonomy Act, because under the Autonomy Act, if they tick medical research or science, they have the right to take any part of your tissues for medical or science research. That's not only Aboriginal people, that's everybody.
I get that. I get that now because we get asked that question, you know, with our license, do you want to be used for whatever else, you know what I mean, donate or donor or what have you. But you're talking about the 70s. You're talking about...
They do it now, she said.
They still do it now. The researcher that was on the phone, she said, well, you know, we have the right. And then all I can hear in my head from March is her saying science.
But who has the right over anybody's child, sibling? I don't understand that. And I don't want to sound stupid or naive.
To put a clause in there. Like in the legislation that Indigenous or First Nation people, that they are, because everything we're fighting for repatriation of our ancestors overseas in museums and institutions from early on, and now these forgotten Australian children that are sitting in bio labs, there should be a Senate inquiry or a royal commission.
I think a royal commission.
Change that they can't take those parts under legislation of the First Nation people.
Mm.
How are you and your mob feeling at the moment with knowing what you now have to relive again and go through? And how is your mum?
Oh, it's getting to her.
It's getting to her.
Yeah, it's, you know, like she had to relive Michael's death over.
That's what
and
I mean.
Over
you
and over
you
and
lose
over.
A child is traumatic enough, and you know to lose a child, I think, and hopefully find peace, you know, and be able to take your child back, especially for an Indigenous family, back to your country, your land, your mob, and to be able to mourn is something that, you know, it's very powerful, isn't it? Within the culture, it's a very powerful thing.
And see, the worst thing is that a lot of them children are in unmarked graves or in multiple graves and may never be found. You know what I mean? Like, they only remember their children being taken to Camperdown Children's Hospital and never coming home. But they didn't know the brunt of what was going on in that hospital. Because what happened was all the medical records, all the research on these kids were lost or destroyed.
Convenient, eh?
And Michael is the only record
intact.
They couldn't even find it for the bringing him OHM report, like the Bring an OHM report, when they did the stolen generation, because one of the Green senators asked that he needed evidence that this was happening. But see, one thing about Mum, she's truly a strong lady because she kept him alive, because even my grandmother didn't know, her own mother didn't know she had another son, because I asked Uncle Robert, did he know of Michael?
So your mum, can I say maybe for the respect of you all, she didn't want to traumatize
to know
the rest of the family and let everybody else feel her pain, obviously.
Mm. Yeah.
Do you think that this will be closure, though, having the last remaining...
Oh, no.
It's hard to put it into words, isn't it? Because that's what you're receiving back. You're not getting back your brother. You're getting parts of your brother as opposed to what you should have got.
We're still in shock. Like, after going through all that ordeal of finding him, going through all that, you know, unmarked graves and fighting to take him home, and then 2 years later, you know, you get that phone call to say, well, hello, we have tissue, body parts of your brother. Words can't describe it.
No.
Right. Words can't describe it. Like,
I don't think it could. I really don't. And I don't think unless, you know, I'm sure there's listeners out there that can definitely relate to this. And I really pray to God that once this goes to air, that there's others out there that come forward, you know, and because there will be. There'll be others out there. Other mothers, like you said, unfortunately, going to be a lot of mothers that have passed on.
And you know,
that have died with broken hearts.
And you know, the Stolen Generation Compensation Bill of 2008, where Rudd said that all descendants and people that suffered this in the Stolen Generation should be compensated. You ain't going to believe this, but New South Wales put in a clause that only living people, Aboriginal people of the Stolen Generation era, can get compensation, and no descendants can fill in for compensations of loved ones that passed.
Well, your mum's still alive. You're still alive.
She won't get it. She won't get it because Michael's deceased. That's one thing I want to do is open a Senate inquiry. I submission to them and they didn't even respond. They said it was a state issue.
Where is Michael actually buried now?
In Armidale.
So he's back on country.
We took him home. He's near Dawson. He's right near his brother.
Yeah, deadly. That's beautiful. When you look at it from
Mum
that point of view.
Well, Mum tried to make him a baby's grave, and I said, Mum, he's an adult now because he's going to be 50 this November. We still celebrate him like he's present.
And so you should because, you know, he is present. He's still actively around you all.
Yeah.
You know, and that's...
And we had a Koori man, Brendan.
Oh, he's
from
awesome.
Metro in Sydney.
Yeah.
He was part of the exhumation. He actually went in when they got to Michael's coffin and did a smoking ceremony and he played the didgeridoo at the site and he gave us gum leaves to wipe underneath our arms and rub it on the coffin. And
cultural.
And he said that Michael has a strong spirit. And he said that Michael said, get me the fuck out of here.
You know, I got to give it to you.
That's the only time I swore, and I told when we were re-interning him.
Oh, you should have heard.
I turned around, and they bleeped me. They didn't put it in there, and I said, "Oh, guess what, Michael? You're the fuck home now."
Well, I can tell you this: this ain't getting bleeped, so you can be fucking as open and honest as you want, sister. Because I tell you now.
No, we'll see the. The agreement was if he was dirt, like clay, we were to re-intern him back into that grave at Rookwood and no one's to be buried on top of him. That was the agreement. But if there was bone fragments, we were taking him home because Mum wanted an identification of DNA.
So there was bone fragments. There were bone fragments.
There was none.
There wasn't any.
That what happened was her. When they put the man on top in 1986, it broke Michael's cast.
Yep.
And the air, you know, the water and everything got in there. So he was abominated in clay. And
was any fossilized within that clay? Was there anything fossilized?
Well, see, we had our own forensic archaeologist.
Oh, yeah, we had to bring her in.
And they were trying not let her get in the grave.
She was our eyes and ears.
Yes.
Because there was a lot of red tape. They weren't even going to go any deeper.
You know what I mean? So we had our own forensic team. And Louise told my mother that she could, it's like a tire track. It's like she was explaining it, that you could see a dusting of his little legs.
Mm.
So it was just amazing. And she drew the picture where Michael's coffin was and then beat up top, the man on top.
Mm.
And there was landfill above that where they were going to put a third grave.
They were going to put a third one on there.
See, so we were very lucky that we got him out.
And oh, we went through, oh, look, to
don't
hell
worry,
back.
I'm going
to
write a book, Brett.
Write a book. I tell you what, that's just.
And I'll even autograph it for you.
I'll take the book. Oh,
we
and
had
I'll
a lot
read
of red tape through health.
How's everything going now with the political side of it? Surely there's got to be some sort of inquiry. There's got to be
that's
something happening.
That's why we did Michael's Law, and we added more to it.
Yes.
I just want everybody to remember Michael's Law. And then there's other sections to that that Zona has attached to that, because that's where when I first scrutinised.
Is this a legislation that's been passed now under Michael's
no,
law?
No, it's not passed.
Not passed.
No, what it is, we need another Senate inquiry into that compensation, because that runs out, the stolen generation compensation.
Yep.
Right? We need another Senate inquiry into that, because these mothers that are in grieving in silence, they need to be compensated for the death of their children, you know, because their children went through pain.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean, Brett? They were injecting these babies with leprosy, polio. You know, these were early 60s. There was documentation of that. They were sterilizing them.
This is the thing. There is documentation. That's the proof. There it is. It's not just a hearsay or someone saying,
no.
Oh, you're starting to fire up and cause drama. This is
them.
This
yeah,
is
but
fact.
The government, the federal government, nor did the state governments looked at that. They the forgotten Australian.
Children.
Yeah, the children.
And see, with Michael, they even gave him a blood transfusion. And after he had that blood transfusion, which was very rapid, killed him.
He went into shock.
And that's all in his medical records.
See, we got his whole.
They can't deny any of this. They can't deny any of it then. It's all fact. It's written.
No, well, we see, all we need is a Senate inquiry. If we can set up a petition. See, we got Michael home. We got Michael's tissues.
Well,
but
what about the other
mothers? So there need to be an online petition. We did it for the stopping the adoption of children in care of docs, because they were going to adopt our kids out again, that we did an online petition for our whole, you know, all our mob to come and say no.
Yeah.
And this is where we need another Senate inquiry into the forgotten children that went through hell for medical research and science.
Can I ask you both, and this may be, you know, a pretty straight no, but have you met any other mothers that have had to experience this? Have you been able to connect with anybody else?
No.
No.
Yeah.
See, it's only just come out now.
And yes, the media are actually very interested in what's going on with you and your family right now, aren't they? Are you able to talk a bit more about that?
Yeah, we did two documentaries with NITV.
Yep.
We did Live in Black in 2019, and they won an award for that.
Mm.
the
NITV.
Cara Grant and that. They won the award at the NRMA Awards.
And it was all based around Michael, predominantly around Michael. Yeah.
You got to watch it.
I will be.
It's really.
Look, I've got a
tissue. Point just did an episode last week on Wednesday about the tissue samples, and my mother is being interviewed there, and she's a strong woman, but she's calling for other mothers to come forward.
Yeah, and I think that's a very strong, proud woman right there, being able to stand up and speak of her loss, and you women as well, being able to put this out public. Look, I think that this is something that needs to be brought out to the public, and I'm glad that you've got media support. Are the media that you're talking about going to come? And, I mean, obviously it's a very private burial.
Oh, they're coming. It's the Koori Mail. So if people keep an eye out for the Koori Mail, see, the point has already done this. They just flagged it to see if any mothers out there, you know, that are...
We're calling on them.
So we're trying to have a voice.
Well, then, you know what? This platform here, let's make that be heard, because, you know, we hit over 300,000 people downloading our podcast, so it's not like it goes on deaf ears. And this particular one is different to the ones that we have done in the past. I personally felt honoured to be able to share your story, and the moment that I was informed about what had happened to Michael through another party that we both I won't, you know, go into too much because it's obviously quite confidential. But, you know, being approached about that, my first reaction was, what can we do to help? You know, this is something that I think that if we can assist in any way, shape or form, getting that message out there and hopefully, you know, you being heard asking for other mothers to come forward.
Well, I think that we, you know how it's Black Lives Matter, which is a big push because we do matter.
Do you both in your heart, and I know I expect you to say yes, but from a medical point of view, do you feel that Michael could have been saved and here till today?
Well, what I found on his medical records where they said he was extinct, that a doctor wrote that he felt that Michael had just bronchiolitis.
So bronchiolitis back then was manageable?
Yes.
So to answer that question, Michael most definitely could have been alive today. That's
horrific. But you know what? We got him in spirit.
You do. And that's what I'm saying.
Yes, he's
that's
always around. He hides stuff.
See, that's the kid in him. He's that's a little fellow. No,
it's a pain in the butt. He hides the keys and everything. Like, we can't find them for 2 hours, and then we come back to the same spot where they was, and there they are.
Oh, that's gold. That's gold. That's gold.
We had to tell him that Michael takes stuff. He hides it.
You know what? I look at the spirit within you women, and I got to say, it's beautiful to see you. It's beautiful to see you being able to laugh and smile in such good jest, you know, because it tells me that although there's so much trauma that's been created, you know, for you all in the family, you still find that beautiful side to, you know, knowing your brother's with you and, you know, that you're going to be okay in the end. It's just time. Yeah. It's just time, you know, and...
Yeah, Mum went and made him a baby grave, and I said, Mum, we'll chuck you around, so you have to go.
He's a man now.
And she had to go and make it a full adult grave.
I want to ask is just before we head off and we shut it down on this one, but you want to reach out to all the women out there. Can you please leave a message? Sister, put it out there. Let it be heard loud and proud, and look, whatever information you got there for people to contact you or whoever they need to contact, please share it.
We just want all our deadly mothers to come forward, you know, for all those, you know, who had babies back in the 60s, 70s, who have lost their babies, to come forward.
Yeah.
Because they're not alone. My mum went through it. And us as siblings to Michael and... her being my mum, we got through this. And Michael is, you know, a clear example of how passionate our family are was to bring our baby brother home. You can be taken home to country. You can be taken home to family.
Very powerful. Very powerful, Diane. I honestly want to say to both you and Zana that I truly am honoured and grateful that you've been able to sit down and yarn up with me about this, because it is something that's so close to you and your mob's heart. And, you know, like it's, I know death is not spoken of.
No, you know? It ain't.
So for you to trust in me and allow me to be able to deliver your story, you know, to thousands of people out there listening, I really hope that we're able to do something in some way to help you and the other mothers out there that have lost their children. I'm a little bit sort of lost for words, and I think that's probably one of the most powerful endings, and especially in season four being such a dedicated season where we've had some amazing, inspiring women, and both yourself and Zona and your beautiful mum, even though I haven't had the pleasure of seeing, I can only imagine by you two.
Oh, she's
woman.
Strong. Oh, she's still a mother, though. Even when you're an adult, she tells you how to live your life.
Oh, God love you. Well, listen, I wish you nothing but the best, and my prayers and heart is with you all, especially on Thursday when you lay Michael finally to rest. In a complete...
That's next Thursday.
Yep.
A journey that we've got to take again. It's like, okay, the day is coming, but at least we can come together as a big family, big mob, you know, all his aunties, all his uncles, and at least.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Di, honest to God, like it is. And like I said, you know, it's, I know how hard it is to talk about death within
Watch the documentary.
Yeah, I will be. I will be for sure. And that's something I will pay a genuine interest into. And
then that way you'll get a more clear, transparent idea of, you know, our journey.
Yep.
And
definitely.
Especially my mum. And, you know, the second chapter, you know, second journey, yeah.
For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. That's right. For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you. For the record, lab on me going all the way. For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste. For the record, 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 for the record.